Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Unmitigated disaster. That is what one of the biggest Tesla bulls said about the EV maker's first quarter deliveries. The stock is down close to 35% this year. Is the worst still to come? We will debate that. Plus, tanked tops, pants, and more. Shares of PVH falling more than 20% after the Calvin Klein and Hilfiger parent gave weak guidance for the rest of the year. Is this a warning that will ripple through retail? And later, the battle for the boardroom. We are just hours away from the end of Disney's knockdown, drag-out fight with Tryon's Nelson Peltz. The winner, the loser, and the impact straight ahead. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Courtney Garcia, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Stocks falling further on the second day of the new quarter, the Dow dropping nearly 400 points, the Nasdaq down nearly 1%. Meantime, rates are back on the rise. The yield on the 10-year Treasury touching 4.4% for the first time since last November. We're going to get to more on that in just a minute, but we start off tonight with a potential turning point for Tesla. Shares sinking nearly 5% after the EV maker reported Q1 deliveries that fell far short of even the most bearish of estimates. The company getting fewer than 390,000 cars to customers, its first year-over-year delivery decline since the height of the pandemic, and its biggest miss in 5 years. The report prompting even Uber Tesla bull Dan Ives to raise a red flag, calling it, quote, unmitigated disaster that is hard to explain away. He still rates, though, the stock an outperform with a $300 price target, a level it hasn't seen since September of 2022. But is this the straw that finally breaks the Tesla bull's backs? Are we at an inflection point for this stock? Guy, what do you think?
Huge level in the stock. Yes is the answer to your question. You got to believe that trough margins we thought we had 3 quarters ago, that's a bit of a pipe dream. So I've thought margins are a story. That last, I think it was 3 quarters ago when they said, you know what, that's it in terms of margins. We're going to start to reaccelerate. I think the stock went from like 185. That was a move up to, I think, almost $300 from the 185 level. We're right back there now. Critical level, this is where we took off from last April, traded a decent amount of volume today, but you still got to wait, in my opinion, till the earnings release, I think on the 23rd. And if margins are disappointing on the back of what you heard today, that level that we saw, that low that we put in, that 113 low, that's in the cards, I think.
I mean, I think it's going to have to deliver on more than just margins at this point in time. They're also going to probably give the full year guidance and have to ratchet that down. No, I mean, nobody expects them to hit that number at this point.
No, it seems like we're in a period, too, where there's not going to be a lot of great news until we either have more on models, until we either have some kind of a pickup. And the questions are, you know, coming off of the first down delivery quarter since, I think, second quarter of 2020, is what's causing it? Is it self-inflicted? Is it demand? Is it macro? Have all the early EV adopters gone bye-bye? Is it? And frankly, it seems like it's a little bit of everything. I don't think this is, you know, I don't think this is Chinese competitors in the U.S. market for sure. I think this is certainly to be extent China has been weak for them. I do think it's margins. I do think that incentives so far in March show they're not even helping here. So, you know, ultimately it gets back to if you're an investor, I'm not sure. Look, you don't have to wait for good news and catalyst to actually go buy a stock. In many cases, they bought them in advance of that. Is that what's going on here? Because I think the good news for Tesla has to now be 3 or 4 quarters out. I just think that, you know, the silver lining is, again, they finished actually, they're now ahead of BYD in terms of BEV deliveries, at least on a global basis. But that's just because I think that's a very volatile series there for the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, we already knew that from the company itself that it was going to be between two waves of growth, right? And so here we are in this sort of trough. And so how do we navigate this trough? How bad does it get during this volatile period until the promised second wave of growth that we should see, according to the company?
And I think it's going to come down to, and you alluded to this, where it's coming from, because what Tesla did come out and say is it's issues with some of their factories, maybe on the production side. My question is how much that's on the demand side. Like, they're starting to get a lot more competition. Definitely competition, specifically in China, has been an issue for them. But also, they just lost it was like $7,500 in EV credit, tax credit, just went away for a lot of their Model 3s. So how much of that was people getting the Teslas before that went away? Now you have a lot less demand now that tax credit's gone. I think we'll have to see, is that a one-time blip, or is there a lot less demand? And people we've all seen are going more towards hybrids, less towards full electric vehicles. I just wonder how much the demand is the picture. We don't have that yet, but I think we need to see that.
That's the missing piece, demand.
Yeah. You know, listen, this is not going to be a popular opinion here, but it looks like the most genius CEO on the face of the planet has miscalculated on so many different ways over the last 5 years. And none more punctuated by this gambit with, like, the Cybertruck. You know, this was like a smoke and mirrors sort of thing. Let's get this thing out here. Let's make 300 a week. Let's kind of get, you know, all the bros really excited about this sort of thing and all the stuff that it can do. And like, and what did they do? They literally, like, they just dropped the ball on a low-end EV that is kicking their butt in China right now by a lot of local competition, a lot of local competition that nobody wanted to acknowledge for years and years. And we spent a lot of time on this desk talking about, well, Detroit's going to come from, and Korea is going to come from, and the Germans. That didn't even matter. Half the output comes from Giga Shanghai. And if the cars that they don't sell there, they ship to Europe and the like. So there's a lot of competition all over the place, but most importantly in China. And you think about this, the other thing that the company really miscalculated on, this whole idea of price elasticity, right? And as soon as they started cutting the prices, it just kept on pushing demand further and further. And the thing that I said last night, and I probably said it 50 times over the last year or so, and this company hasn't even seen a really bad economy in the U.S. since COVID, the last time that they had year-over-year delivery decline. So to me, I just think it's kind of interesting. I think at some point, this stock is likely on its way. I don't think it's a great press on the short side. I know a lot of people who watch this show, they don't really short stocks. They don't buy puts. They don't do this, that, or whatever. Okay. But it's probably going to 100. It's probably going back to that level that it got to. I think it was in late, you know, like January, you know, that period of 2022 when it just kind of fell off a cliff from 200 or whatever. Look at that chart right there. I mean, listen, this is one of the worst looking stock charts I've ever seen in my life. And I mean that. And this was a $1 trillion market cap company at the end of 2021. So I just think that it's not a great story. The sentiment's really bad. It doesn't make for a great press on the short side. But by the same token, to Tim's point, the fundamentals are not likely to get better for a couple quarters here.
And I think the analyst community has to follow through. I mean, this is just kind of how it works. There's going to be a slew of downgrades here, which aren't going to help. Doesn't mean that some
after
people haven't.
Probably.
Yeah. And I think even there will be some folks that are going to make numbers changes based upon this. I also think that if you look at the broader market investing environment, where there really has been a lot of momentum, there has been a lot of, you know, let's call it speculative activity. The fact that Tesla is not participating at all, I think, is right. I think that the cult nature of this stock, you haven't seen an unwind of that. Those are the people that have been holding in. So this was an expensive stock that is getting more expensive by the day. And the question is this really a growth stock? It's clearly not right now.
In terms of the miscalculations, I agree with you in terms of the price elasticity and them sort of moving the needle around on the price, because what are consumers going to do? But in terms of the turn in demand for EVs, I don't know if anybody could have anticipated such a quick and dramatic turn.
Well, if anybody should have, it should have been the company that pioneered the EV revolution. I mean, like the ones, I mean, like let's just be clear. And he's been whining about interest rates. He's been whining about an economy. When I see a whole host, hey, make no mistake about it. This company was ground zero for AI. What do you think full self-driving is? It's AI.
Every automaker, though, that had an EV offering miscalculated demand on EVs.
Yeah,
right?
But look,
they all had to ratchet back their EV plans.
And look what happened to GM and Ford as soon as they started to do that. It's pretty interesting.
But so I think we're getting at an important question. I mean, do we think EVs, you know, that demand is shot, that this secular trend is at least, and we know people are going to continue to buy. We know that the internal combustion engine at some point becomes, you know, goes the way of the dinosaur, although it does seem like it's going to take some time. But that seems to be the question we're having here, because if you're talking about EV, they're still out in front by a lot. And I'm not here to defend Tesla because, in fact, I've not liked this stock for a long, long time, and I'd like it less now. But I think if we are questioning EVs, there's probably a lot of people that could get up here and debate this. And I don't think you can say that demand for EV as, you know, versus a hybrid and obviously versus an ICE engine and internal combustion. You can't tell me that EV demand has peaked. It hasn't. And
no,
that seems
I,
to
I
be.
Don't, I don't think anybody's saying that here, at least. But I think that is the debate. Right.
But it's not just about EVs, and I'm sorry, I'll let you guys in. This stock still has a half a trillion dollar market cap. And that's not because of EVs, okay? It's because of this belief about full self-driving, about this whole thing. That's what it's about. And so until they can demonstrate something on that front, I just don't know how the stock recovers. That being said, when they report, and if they just kitchen sink it, right, the whole year, and they talk about these waves, they have to get to that mass market $25,000. That's the thing that's robo-taxis. That's the thing that they can sell all over the world, you know, and do it at production and get the margins at a level that works, okay? That's the story. That's going to take quarters, all right? So right here, right now, when the stock breaks, it goes, it's going to go back to $100. I'm just telling you that. And you just start buying it because then you have the opportunity between there and $100 to get a 100% move when they finally get their stuff together. So to me, I think that there's going to be an opportunity really soon. It's just not there yet.
Think about the interest rates notwithstanding, which Elon Musk mentioned a couple quarters ago. Obviously, he was troubled by that. But think about the environment that they find themselves in, they being Tesla and the rest of these groups. Unemployment's historic lows still. People have jobs. People are clearly spending money. And gasoline, very quietly, has been going higher in a pretty meaningful way, which theoretically should lend itself to demand for these cars. It's not happening. So that's the environment that it should be happening. It's not. What happens if that switches, if the switch gets flipped in terms of unemployment? So if unemployment rate starts to go meaningfully higher, which I happen to believe it will, that's just one more headwind for this entire story.
All right. Well, the road ahead may look rocky for Tesla, but our next guest sees today's news as a test of investor patience. Managing partner of Deepwater Asset Management and Fast Money friend Gene Munster joins us now. And Gene, you personally are amongst those legions of investors whose patience will be tested. So what are you waiting for?
Indeed. Melissa, first, I am bracing as someone who's been supportive of what Tesla's doing and optimistic about where this company can go. I was just stunned today. I think that this caught me off guard. I was expecting it basically to be flat. Deliveries is down 9%. And the first question I ask first order of business is, how bad is it going to get? The panel's done a great job of articulating there's going to be more negativity. I just want to put that in the context, is that going into today, the street was looking for about 15% delivery growth in 2024. If you look at the numbers they just reported and assume that they can grow deliveries 10% sequentially for the rest of the year, deliveries will be down 3% for the year. So this is probably more ugly than it seems even today. And given that change and look what happened in the stock, I don't think that's fully priced in. So I think, Dan, you've been clear about that $100. I don't think we're going to see $100, but I do believe that the stock is going to go lower because this is going to be what I think is going to be kind of the kitchen sink where you're going to see analysts. I had that job for a long time, throw in the towel and say that this is going to be over for a long time. So I want to point that, start there. Second is the bigger picture. And I think, Tim, you were talking about just, you know, this EV and the EV picture. Just to frame that in, that's a $2.5 trillion market. What's the auto market on a yearly basis? Eventually, of course, it's going to go EV. Panel appropriately talked about what's the timing of that. I think it's going to come faster than most people think, even though this is such an ugly day on the delivery numbers. And the reason is that I believe one of the biggest factors in this horrible number was that there was so much excitement around EVs. People who typically buy a car every 5 years probably moved it forward, bought it 3 years, pulled a lot of demand in. I think eventually that just starts. I'm guilty of being too optimistic, but I think eventually they get to the other side. And one final thought, Dan, you talked about FSD. I agree that that is an important piece here. If anybody's tried FSD, the beta that they just put out last week, it is a step function better than what they've ever done. And so I think that is going to come probably in the next year or two. And I believe that that's going to be another catalyst. So that's where I'm at.
What can they tell us, if anything, in the next quarter or two that can sort of, I don't want to say solve certain issues, but for instance, if they come out with a lower cost model, does that solve for some of the weakness that they will see in China and address that next wave of growth that investors are looking for? Is there sort of a couple of things that they can do that can make the story a little bit better?
So you've got two camps. You've got the people who believe, and the reason why the stock's not down more today is because that camp still exists. The reason why this still has the market cap it does is because that camp still exists. They're not going to be influenced probably by another couple punky quarters. That won't influence it. The people who are skeptical, there's nothing that Tesla's going to say over the next, when they report their quarter on the 23rd, that's going to get those people more optimistic. But as an investor, I think you need to fast forward to, I'm already thinking about mid-2025. And at that point, we're going to have some really easy comps. I mean, this is a down 9%, March of 2025. is we're going to start to get easier comps. I think that starts getting reflected in the stock probably mid to late this year. So that's kind of the time frame. It's going to be rocky for the next several months. I don't think there's much they can say, Melissa.
Wow. Gene, thanks. Gene Munster, Deepwater Asset Management. We should be clear. Gene owns it personally. Deepwater does not. Mid-2025, that's a long time to wait. A lot can happen. I mean, overlay what's going to happen with rates. We don't know. With the economy and unemployment.
You're right. The market will get ahead of that. They'll sniff it out at some point, right? So maybe a mid-25, early 25 story in terms of the turn, but the market will sniff that out long before. It's a question of, and again, I think Dan said it, you're not pressing shorts here. I would say you're probably looking for an entry level at some point. And Gene just said, who's probably been as ardent a bull out there, that he thinks the stock goes lower. So have your sort of levels in mind and then swoop in when it gets there. Of course, the problem is when it gets there, it's going to look scary as possibly can be. Mm-hmm. That's when you have to sort of close your eyes and stick to your guns.
All right, let's turn out to the markets. Major indices sliding for a second day in a row, weighed down by rising yields and oil prices. The Dow dropping nearly 400 points as the 10-year Treasury marches to its highest level since November. Where do we go from here as stocks retreat to kick off Q2? I feel like, we've had this discussion many times about higher rates, sticky inflation, et cetera. And now the markets are saying, look at this.
Higher rates have been something that I think the market has digested at different times with different sense of velocity since July of 2020. I think rates have been going higher for 4 years or 3.5 years, and I think they're going to continue to trickle higher. A lot of interesting, at least conversation being had on the deficit. What's sustainable? What can be refinanced? The numbers don't really add up. And if you add in the dynamics of Washington and dysfunction and credit downgrades, and you add in refunding schedule, TRA, things that we never really, worked the room on, it's not good for equities. And it's not good for equities. Now, make no mistake, on Friday, if we get a really weak payroll number, yields are going to go lower. They're going to go lower before they go higher. That's ultimately what's going to happen. But ultimately, the U.S. economy is kind of like a stock. If GDP shrinks, you're going to have a dynamic where, they're not making as much money in USA Corp. And that's really going to be terrible for yields overall. So I think for equities, let's get back to it's easy to be critical about where all the EPS growth has come from and where it's going to be. We know this in Q4. It was 68% growth by the top handful of stocks we all know, and the rest grew by 0.9. The street is expecting 12.9% earnings growth. Let's see. Right now, I also don't think you can necessarily throw away the fact that those big stocks are the ones that actually could carry us through a rising rate environment. Remember, these are the stocks that are very defensive during that time.
Yeah, and at the same time today, we're getting Fed speak that indicate 3 is still a good baseline, which is what we were sort of debating in the past couple of sessions.
And I think that's what you're seeing is every time the Fed comes out, the markets are going to get ahead of themselves one way or the other. And they did come out and they really kind of showed their cards early before they're actually lowering interest rates. They were really indicative they're going to do so. Now markets got overly excited. Now they're pulling back. So we've seen this push and pull several times. I don't think it's necessarily anything to be concerned about because the big question is still, when are rates going to come down? We're still probably at a peak of them. At some point in time, they'll come down. Maybe they don't cut at all this year. I know people are talking about that more, which will only happen because the economy's on good footing. But I don't think they're going higher. And I think you're going to see some push and pull. But I don't think this is something to be overly concerned about these last 2 days.
If Courtney's right, not that she's right, with what she said in terms of no cuts, that might be the most bullish scenario for stocks that is out there. Somewhat counterintuitive, but that would suggest, things are going fine. There's no reason to cut. 3 cuts still? Well, if they start cutting rates, those inflationary pressures, which are problematic, are only going to continue. I mean, this gold move and bond move basically took place on that seemingly interpreted as dovish commentary out of Jerome Powell a couple weeks ago. So they got to combat that now, and it's not happening. And it's not just energy. It's all the soft commodities that we talked about last week as well.
Yeah, so 12% expected earnings growth, S&P 500. You have crude oil where it is right now. You have the dollar where it is right now. You have wages where they are right now. That's going to be hard to come by. I mean, we might have gotten to peak margins for S&P 500 companies. When you start getting peak margins, that's when you start kind of tweaking your valuation metrics a little bit and thinking about, okay, we talked about it last night, the S&P trading about 21 times. That's a few turns over the average over the last, 10 years or so. This is the most uncertain environment that we have had in our lifetimes about inflation. And I've actually never seen, you can say that there's a lot of clarity about what the Fed is saying and how they're kind of, signaling what they might do. I've actually never seen more, I don't confusion on their part. If you think about what at least the markets were interpreting just 3.5 months ago about how many cuts based on what they were telling us, I don't think they have a clue. And I think that we're going to see June cut priced out pretty quickly here. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if like a one-off, you know, like employment report on Friday is going to do the thing. The way rates just rallied, like moved over the last two trading days with that sort of thing, that was something that I think people really should pay attention to, because we still have not seen a lot of equity volatility. We had a VIX that was trading at 12 and a half, what, 2 days ago?
Yeah, I think the VIX was really maybe the story of the day. And I think that that's a function of rates. Guys talking about gold, I think gold goes a lot higher. Gold, the traditional correlations for gold have also kind of broken down. Gold's doing this with a higher dollar. Oil's doing this with a higher dollar. Commodities are doing this with a higher dollar. It tells you where people want to be. They want to be in terra firma. I do think interest rate sensitives, which have had a ridiculous move, and I would go to a Toll Brothers or some of these names, that I think, you know, I just feel like a little interest rate shock. There has been a trade going on here. And if you look at it, actually, the strength in rates, so rates moving higher in the fall and then getting weaker, actually took these things to new highs, as if that suddenly they were, you know, at the beginning of a cycle again. I don't think we are. We know what housing demand is.
Coming up, all the intel out of Intel, the chipmaker updating investors on its new foundry business, what CEO Pat Gelsinger had to say about the company's vision and how it could impact the stock. Plus, Calvin declined. Company PVH plummeting despite an earnings beat. What the retailer's forecasting that had investors checking out and how it's leading the whole space lower. Don't go anywhere. More Fast Money in 2.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee right here on CNBC.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Intel providing an update for its foundry business in the last hour. CEO Pat Gelsinger and CFO David Zinsser on a call with investors right now. The stock down about 4% after hours. It closed the day down more than 1%. Christina Partz-Nevelis is monitoring that call. Joins us now with the very latest. Hey, Christina.
Hi. Well, Intel looking to convince investors of better profitability as it separates the economics of its fabs from its chip designs. In other words, its manufacturing hubs, its foundry business, and its Intel products, which will have separate P&L, profit and losses, to better highlight the metrics of Intel's businesses starting in Q1 2024 with the hopes that it would improve its valuation. So its latest 8K, which just came out, says Intel expects foundry operating losses to peak in 2024 and then hit break even operating margins. At some point, they're using the word midway between now and the end of 2030, so you could assume maybe 2027, when it targets non-GAAP gross margins of 40% and 30% non-GAAP operating margins. But again, those operating margins that I just provided you are 6 years away. The stock, to your point, reacting negatively because Intel confirmed that its foundry business did operate at a loss of $6.9 billion last year. You can see that on your screen. Compared to, let's say, its product business that brought in $11.3 billion, and that includes networking, data centers, et cetera. So investors right now just aren't necessarily convinced about the profitability, those margins. They're getting asked a lot of questions during the webinar that's going on right now. The company, though, blaming the lack of profitability for its foundry business on, quote, the weight of past decisions and significant front-loaded investments like building the fabs. Remember, they're promising to spend $100 billion on American soil just over the next little while as they build out the fabs and have five new chip nodes in 4 years. But with this breakout of their foundry business, they believe they can be better compared with Taiwan Semiconductor, the largest foundry in the world. So that's the main point of it, right? You can compare now the product business with NVIDIA, and then you can compare the foundry business with TSMC.
Yep, and you can potentially get a sum of the parts
exactly.
Evaluation.
Well, that's what
it.
They're hoping for.
Right. Christina, thanks. Christina Parts Nevelis. Tim, you feel better about the Intel story after this call?
Yeah, look, it's pretty clear that every time they open their mouth, stock goes lower. And they then, you know, when they close their mouth, they get pulled up by the sector. I mean, that's what it feels like. And, you know, $7 billion in terms of operating loss, you know, for that unit and then the services side of it. I mean, it's disappointing. There's clearly tailwind for the space. There's clearly tailwind for this company in our country. But there's no question. Also, if you think about where we're going to be in 2027 for their foundry services business, who knows? I mean, that's absurd to even be talking about 2027
like
at this
point.
Like
two cycles for all we know.
So maybe I just made up my mind today.
I mean, you've been kind of exercising some thoughts here.
I feel better, guy. You know, so
you've been sticking
it was a tough weekend
stuff?
For my Mets. All right. Do I need to get it out here? It was a tough weekend for the Metropolitans.
You can't let that cloud your feelings.
You're
about
right.
Intel.
As traders, we're not supposed to be emotional.
But at the same time, you've been sticking by Intel for a very long time. And this notion of the foundry business was one key reason why. And it's going to take much longer. So I've traded it.
I mean, I've traded it around. And there's no question that there have been different investment theses in the last 3 or 4 years with Intel. And, you know, data center, you know, at one point was really bread and butter before we even knew about AI, and that deterioration gave you a chance to trade it from the long side into this inflection point. Now it seems to be the theme of the night. How long are we going to wait for profitability?
For 15 years, we didn't move our feet. The sector, the whole world passed us by without us even realizing it. We know those mistakes were made. We're moving on from them. We're a homeland security play, investing in the United States. You can believe in us. That's the message. They just tell a really poor one. By the way, you know, it was a very similar story. IBM was obviously, everybody loved IBM. They got lost along the way. The world passed them by.
But look them now. Look at them now.
They figured it out. So Intel can figure it out. They just got to tell the story better. They got to operate better. I actually think you can actually own Intel here.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Apparel in peril. Investors in retail names checking out in a big way today. The headlines leading the group lower and where the weakness lies. Next, plus U.S.-China relations in focus as the presidents of the two countries speak. What came out of that call and how TikTok factors into the conversation. You're watching Fast Money live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Looks like red may be the new black. Retail stocks down big today, led by Tommy Hilfiger and Calvin Klein owner PVH. That stock down more than 22%. Its worst day since 1987. While the company did beat estimates for its most recent quarter's forecast, revenue will decrease by as much as 7% in 2024 and 11% just in the first quarter. Other apparel companies falling today, too, among them Levi's, VF Corp, Guess, and Ralph Lauren, all of them, of course, to depend on other retail outlets to sell their goods. Courtney, maybe that's a common theme here.
Yeah, and I think the big question, too, is this trouble with the consumer or is it trouble with any of these individual brands? Because you're seeing this with a lot of different companies reporting. And I still am firmly of the belief it's not really a problem with the overall consumer. They're clearly showing that their expectations this year are way lower than anybody expected. And I don't know how much that is just them lowering the bar even further. So, you know, hopefully they will do better than that. But I think you really want to see the brands that companies are loyal to, even when they're stretched with inflation. So this might not be one of those, which could clearly be a problem is over the next couple quarters here. But I don't think it's a problem with the consumer.
It actually felt like if you listened to the numbers this morning, U.S. wasn't that bad, but the final countdown was in Europe. It was a lot weaker there.
So what Tim just said there, Mel.
And incorporate that song that annoys me.
Yeah, we just listened to that song on the break. Tweet us if you actually know the name of the band. That is the band, excuse me.
Well, you just gave it away.
So, but if you look at the move in a lot of the apparel names over the last, 3 to 6 months, I mean, it's been extraordinary. So, Courtney's right to say we know the consumer hasn't fallen out of bed. I think discretionary is not a place to be. And I expected discretionary not to be a place to be in 2024, and it's been okay. I think we're starting to get some signs. And some of these apparel folks, if you look across the board, Abercrombie, American Eagle, and if you look, even Ralph Lauren was down big today. I think that's the message.
Yeah, these are sort of the brands that are kind of in the middle. Like, they're not high-end, they're not
100%. I was just thinking the same thing. They're smack in the middle, which is where you don't want to be. Now, these stocks have had great runs, but pull up a PVH chart real quick and see. I mean, this move today was 3 months in the making. This was from December until now. Gave it back in a day. I mean, that's problematic when you see moves like this. I mean, this is not a small company. It's not huge, probably a $6 billion company, but that speaks to a market. That speaks to David Einhorn market from a couple months ago when he said, you know what, a lot of these functions are simply broken.
Coming up, that dream house is looking more and more like just that, a dream. How much housing payments have skyrocketed over the past year and whether there's any relief in sight for would-be homebuyers. But first, President Biden holding a phone call with China's President Xi Jinping. The headlines out of that conversation, what to expect from Treasury Secretary Yellen's trip to the mainland when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks dropping for another day as markets get off to a rough start to Q2. The Dow falling nearly 400 points, the S&P down 0.7%, and the Nasdaq down nearly 1%, all three having their worst daily performances in nearly a month. Despite the down day, some stocks managing to continue hot winning streaks. Newmont Mining notching its sixth day of gains, RTX on its seventh day, and Kraft Heinz up 12 in a row. That's its longest winning streak on record. Meantime, managed care stocks all sharply lower today after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid finalized their rates for Medicare Advantage and Part D programs next year, a story that we brought to you last night. Investors were hoping for a larger increase in rates, the whole sector under pressure. President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping holding a phone call today, tackling issues ranging from TikTok ownership to economic relations. The White House saying the almost two-hour call was a way for the leaders to check in and manage their strained relationship. It comes 2 days before Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen travels to China. Economist Stephen Roach is considered one of the world's leading experts on China. He's the former Morgan Stanley Asia chairman and now a Yale senior fellow. Stephen, great to have you with us. What should we expect, if anything, out of Secretary Yellen's visit to China?
Well, it comes at an important time, Melissa, as all these visits do. First of all, you know, when you're talking about the Xi-Biden call, you got to cut the time in half because of consecutive translation. So they each got maybe, 45 minutes of airtime. But Secretary Yellen has got to deal with this imbalance between supply and demand, which is putting too many Chinese goods into the market right now and a source of concern for the U.S. side. I was in Beijing last week, and there's a lot of talk about manufacturing and upgrading the production on the supply side, but a lot of hand-wringing over the lack of demand. So that imbalance is a big deal.
And at the same time, we had many U.S. CEOs over there in Beijing meeting with President Xi in the sort of orchestrated meeting. So there is this acknowledgement on the part of Beijing that they need American business, and yet there's this strained relationship that runs underneath, Stephen. I'm wondering what you think of this relationship and how it will be as we approach the elections, particularly when we're looking at a potential Trump presidency. He's already, you know, threatened very steep tariffs on Chinese goods.
He has orchestrated, choreographed is a good word to describe last week's meeting. Certainly China has demonstrated a willingness to continue to tell American businessmen that China is open for business, and American businessmen have been more than delighted to echo that same sentiment. But they remain cautious. I was a part of the group that was in China last week. Sentiment is weak. The Chinese policymakers are still giving mixed signals on their receptiveness to U.S. business. So, you know, it's pretty much a jury's out on where this is headed.
Hey, Stephen, it's Tim. There's a lot of codependence that these countries have together. And you know, so whether it is international dynamics, but the diplomacy is welcomed. Do you think Yellen heading to China is there anything related to just what's going on in treasury markets or the biggest buyer of our treasuries? And, you know, are you at all concerned about this dynamic? It's clear the Chinese central bank buying of gold and other diversifiers away from, you know, buying the stuff that historically China couldn't get enough of.
Well, Tim, I hear you on codependence. I wrote a book on that several years ago myself, but I don't think that Secretary Yellen's visit is to talk much about China's role in buying gold or buying U.S. treasuries. I think it has much more to do with just ongoing dialogue, part of the continued communication on strategic economic issues, especially now this supply-demand imbalance that I alluded to earlier.
Stephen, we got some manufacturing data out of China over the weekend, and it was better than expected, signaling that their economy is out of contraction. Did you get any reads on the ground there that would maybe just kind of say, okay, maybe there's some sort of bottoming process going on here, maybe from some of the contacts you have away from the government?
Well, there's hope that the worst is over. The premier did address the China Development Forum in the opening session and spoke hopefully about trends in the first 2 months of the year. But, you know, these are tentative reads at best, given the shortfall in Chinese growth last year. And I think there's still a lot of nervousness in Beijing as to where the economy is headed in the months ahead.
Stephen, we've got to leave it there. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time.
Likewise. Thanks.
Stephen Roach, where are you on China? There are a lot of people who want to believe that this turnaround is in place. Dana mentioned that data, but there's also other data points that had indicated that maybe we are at this juncture of improvement.
Yeah, and we've really remained constructive on emerging markets, including China. And I think you're seeing still such negative sentiment there. I mean, people are finally getting on board with emerging markets, but saying, okay, I want to be emerging markets except for China, which honestly is probably a good sign that the people are still underinvested there. I think it has some ways to go. I do think you want to have a piece of this as your portfolio. I'm not overweight it, but absolutely you want to own this.
That January 22nd low in the FXI is holding up. We pointed out a number of times, and very quietly now at 2460, I think you can own the FXI, and Alibaba's holding in there. It hasn't traded particularly well, but I think China's going to surprise people the upside, specifically the FXI.
Coming up, housing market havoc. Home prices in February more than 5% higher than last year. We'll explore the lock-in effect of high mortgage rates and low supply hitting buyers and sellers hard. Plus, Disney's boardroom battle coming to a head before a major vote tomorrow. What's at stake for Bob Iger, Nelson Peltz, and the rest of the Magic Kingdom right after this. Well, Welcome back to Fast Money. Trouble for the housing market as high mortgage rates and low supply are combining to keep the cost of home ownership high. Our Diana Olick has a deep dive on the numbers. Diana.
Well, Melissa, home prices in February were 5.5% higher than February of last year, according to CoreLogic. And the price gain from January to February was actually nearly twice what it was historically pre-pandemic, suggesting that this spring's market started out very strong despite another rebound in mortgage rates. The trouble, of course, continues to be lack of supply, which is 40% below where it usually is because of that lock-in effect of current homeowners who won't sell because the cost of moving up is so high. How high? Well, in the 22 years before the Fed started raising rates, for the average homeowner, moving to a similar house, say across the street, wouldn't change their monthly payment at all. Upgrading to a 25% more expensive home would increase their monthly payment of principal and interest by 40%, or about $400. Now, fast forward to today, and for homeowners who have rates near record lows, buying their own home in the current market would increase their monthly payment by 60%, and trading up to a 25% more expensive home would result in a 132% increase in that monthly payment, or about $1,800 more. Now, this is an average for the nation, so it'll vary market to market. And in the higher cost markets, it's even more than that, Melissa. So it's kind of crazy.
Are there still all cash buyers out there, Diana? Because mortgage rates wouldn't really pertain to them.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, there's a much larger share of all cash buyers now than there have been in the past. And that's because they're trying to get out of this mortgage rate effect where they would have to pay so much more. Some people are also using cash to be more competitive. The trouble is that that first time buyer is having trouble saving just for the down payment. So for them to get all cash, you know, is going to be very hard. We're hearing about more housing hacks, as they call it, where people are buying homes together with family members or friends. But really, all cash is the way to do it if you want to keep these costs down.
Group buying sounds like a terrible idea, but just me personally. Yeah. Diana, thank you. Diana Olick. So what does this tell us? It tells us that people are really entrenched. And if they do move, they have less money in their pockets to make improvements, et cetera, because their payment is so much more. So what do you do here?
And I mean, it's a real problem that's happening. And you have the millennials are now, there's more of them than baby boomers who are all creating families. There's not enough houses to go around. And a majority of people who have mortgages are still under the 4% rate. So even if interest rates come down, people are not going to be selling their homes anytime in the near future. And that's where the home builders come in. Like, the way to get more affordable housing is to build new houses at a cheaper entry point. So that's where something like a D.R. Horton, I think, is going to continue to benefit from that, because those supply demand constraints are not going away anytime in the near future.
The only thing I think that derails it is the unemployment rate. If people start losing, that will force the hands of people. More supply will come on. I'm not hoping for that. That's sort of the wild card out there. With that said, I mean, the XHB, I think, made an all-time high yesterday, a couple days ago, 111 and change. That's basically equally weighted. But, you know, 4.5% Williams-Sonoma, look at that chart over the last month and a half or 2 months. These things have been parabolic. So you're sticking with it here, understanding that if unemployment starts ticking higher, this thing's going to come cascading lower.
Yeah, I mean, Toll Brothers has gone from 45 to 124 since October of 22. I mean, the moves here have been staggering. Now, the moves that have been also around when we've had those periods of higher rates and then we've had a pullback in that dynamic, you've seen a lot of these stocks completely outperform. I've been wrong on housing. My view halfway through last year was that we'd seen the peak in the housing cycle. What's fascinating to me is that Home Depot and Lowe's are great charts. And those are companies that actually have been the beneficiaries of people sitting tight and doing what they got to do where they live.
Coming up, the battle for Disney's boardroom ends tomorrow. All eyes on that proxy fight. Will this be a big win for Disney, or could activists stage a big comeback? More on the fate of the Magic Kingdom next. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim is chatting exclusively with the CEO of Paychex after earnings this morning. Catch the full interview top of the hour on Mad Money. Meantime, more Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Less than 24 hours until the House of Mouse's pivotal shareholder meeting, and Disney is clinching early victories in the proxy fight with Nelson Peltz's Trian Fund Management. Bloomberg reporting that Disney's biggest institutional investor, Vanguard, is voting in favor of the company's proposed board slate. That adds to its reported lead among the votes counted so far. So how should investors digest the likely outcome for the Magic Kingdom? And does it matter at this point? Because a lot of people have been finally recognizing Disney as a value here.
Yeah, I think as we pointed out, Julia Boorstin's pointed this out, some of the agenda are similar on both sides. I mean, there's no question this is really about profitability and cutting some costs. There are some dynamics, I think, around the streaming business that are really, it's as if we're having this theme tonight. Companies that were not making money that at some point need to show that they can be profitable and a core part of their business. And the guidance we've gotten the company on streaming is really amazing. It's actually been a pretty significant turn. So the valuation still makes a lot of sense, even after a massive move in the stock. Guys marked this many times. I think, what was the bottom on the stock? 77 or something
ish,
like that?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think the environment's still for the stock to go higher.
Think about that. Given that run, given the sell-off over the last 2 days, it had every opportunity to sell off, take profits. It didn't. It was actually higher on the day. So I'm with Tim on this. They report in early May. I think you stay with it in the earnings.
You like Disney?
I do. Yeah. And I think you want to kind of put the proxy battle aside. This is a company who are they're increasing cash flow. Their streaming business is close to profitability. They have a really strong parks business. And I think it, depending on where you see things going, if it is going to go Disney's way, I think that's just supportive that they like the way things are going. So, yeah, I think you absolutely want to play this here.
Do you think we'll hear about Bob Iger's succession? No.
No, I don't. Maybe yeah. Dan has. Maybe imagine Dan running Disney.
No.
You hear that line? That was Nancy laughing in the back.
Well, I mean, it's like a magical
he'd look good with mouse ears.
Kind of place.
Right. Maybe and, they need a non-magical person.
A very realistic person.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, not my jam. I'll go do something in the real world.
Magic and fanciful.
Love Iger, though. I'm going to tell you this. Bob Iger is going to go down no matter what happens here.
As one of the greatest CEOs.
One of the greatest CEOs. When you think of the assets that he bought, the Lucas, the Pixar, the Marvel, and what they have been able to create in and around that, and just think about how difficult this streaming last 10 years have been.
For everybody. But
and what it might look like for the next 10 to 12, you know, whatever it is, and it will be on those assets that they bought.
Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Tim.
Look at that move in energy XLE, but break it down. One of the key names and also one of the key names in Blycep, of course, is Chevron. That's right, CVX.
Courtney.
Disney, we talked about this earlier. I think this is a company that's undervalued. It's a good play for the long run. Set aside the proxy battle, it's still good to own.
Fan.
Yeah, the B in Blycep is Baba. I think you can play it through the K-Web.
It's also the B in Zebra.
Oh, yeah.
Guy.
The Iowa women's basketball team, they're huge fans of Fast Money. Shout out, right, to the ladies.
Hey, they deserve it.
RTX Corp, Melms.
All right, thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.